Rectifying science with religion has been my father's life dream, Vittoria said. He hoped to prove that science and religion are two totally compatible fields, two different approaches to finding the same truth. And recently, he conceived of a way to do that. Kohler remained silent. Mr. Langdon, Vittoria said, turning, I assume you are familiar with the Big Bang theory. Langdon shrugged. Of course, more or less. Vittoria continued. Although proposed by a Catholic monk, Georges Lemaître, in 1927, scientists immediately mathematized the Big Bang theory, removed all religious overtones, and claimed it as their own. Unfortunately for science, however, their equations, even today, have one serious deficiency that the church likes to point out. Kohler grunted. The singularity. He spoke the word as if it were the bane of his existence. Yes, the singularity, Vittoria said. The exact moment of creation. Time zero. She looked at Langdon. Even today, science cannot grasp the initial moment of creation. But my father believed someday it would. She ran a hand through her long hair, looking melancholy. He set out to do something no scientist had ever thought to do. Something that no one has ever had the technology to do. She paused as though uncertain how to speak the next words. He designed an experiment to prove Genesis was possible. Kohler's dead gaze bored across the room.
I beg your pardon.
My father created a universe from nothing at all. It was done on a much smaller scale, of course. Vittoria went on, talking faster now. The process was remarkably simple. He accelerated two ultra-thin particle beams in opposite directions. The two beams collided head-on at enormous speeds, driving into one another and compressing all their energy into a single pinpoint. Without warning, inside the accelerator tube, particles of matter began appearing out of nowhere. Kohler made no reaction. He simply stared. Matter, Vittoria repeated, blossoming out of nothing. An incredible display of subatomic fireworks. He proved not only that matter can be created from nothing, but that the Big Bang and Genesis can be explained simply by accepting the presence of an enormous source of energy.
You mean God?
Kohler demanded. She nodded briskly. God, Buddha, the Force, Yahweh, the singularity, the unicity point, call it whatever you like. The result is the same. Science and religion support the same truth. Pure energy is the father of creation.
When Kohler finally spoke, his voice was somber. Vittoria, you have me at a loss. It sounds like you're telling me your father created matter out of nothing.
Yes. Vittoria motioned to some canisters standing on pillars near the center of the room. And there is the proof. In those canisters are specimens of the matter he created. Kohler coughed and moved toward the canisters like a wary animal, circling something he instinctively sensed was wrong.
How do you expect anyone to believe these canisters contain particles of matter your father actually created? They could be particles from anywhere at all.
Actually, Vittoria said, sounding confident, they couldn't. These particles are unique. They are a type of matter that does not exist anywhere on Earth. Hence, they had to be created.
Kohler's face hardened. Vittoria, surely you can't be saying those canisters contain actual specimens.
I am. She gazed proudly at the canisters. Director, you are looking at the world's first specimens of antimatter.
Phase two, the assassin thought, striding into the darkened tunnel with his torch.
There was no mirror in the passage to admire his disguise, but he could sense from the shadow of his billowing robe that he was perfect. 2 weeks ago, he would have considered the task awaiting him at the far end of this tunnel impossible. A suicide mission. Walking naked into a lion's lair. But Janus had changed the definition of impossible. As he drew closer to his enemy, the assassin wondered if what awaited him inside would be as easy as Janus had promised. Janus had assured him someone on the inside would make the necessary arrangements. Someone on the inside. Incredible. The more he considered it, the more he realized it was child's play. I suppose you've heard of antimatter, Mr. Langdon. Victoria was studying him, her dark skin in stark contrast to the white lab. Langdon felt suddenly dumb.
Yes, well, sort of. Isn't antimatter what fuels the USS Enterprise?
She nodded. Good science fiction has its roots in good science. Scientists have known since 1918 that two kinds of matter were created in the Big Bang. One matter is the kind we see here on Earth, making up rocks, trees, people. The other is its inverse, identical to matter in all respects, except that the charges of its particles are reversed. Kohler spoke as though emerging from a fog. His voice sounded suddenly precarious.
But even if what you say is true, these canisters are certainly made of matter. Antimatter cannot be stored inside canisters made out of matter. The antimatter would instantly react with...
The specimen is not touching the canister, Victoria said, apparently expecting the question. The antimatter is suspended. The canisters are called antimatter traps, because they literally trap the antimatter in the center of the canister, suspending it at a safe distance from the sides and bottom.
Suspended? But how?
Between two intersecting magnetic fields. It was my own design. My father produced the first particles of antimatter, but was stymied by how to store them. I suggested these. Airtight nanocomposite shells with opposing electromagnets at each end.
Where's the power source for the magnets?
Kohler asked. Victoria pointed. In the pillar beneath the trap. The canisters are screwed into a docking port that continuously recharges them so the magnets never fail.
And if the field fails?
The obvious. The antimatter falls out of suspension, hits the bottom of the trap, and we see an annihilation.
Langdon's ears pricked up.
Annihilation?
He didn't like the sound of it.
Victoria looked unconcerned. Yes. If antimatter and matter make contact, both are destroyed instantly. Physicists call the process annihilation. I'm afraid antimatter has some astonishing characteristics, Mr. Langdon, which make it quite dangerous. A 10-milligram sample, the volume of a grain of sand, is hypothesized to hold as much energy as about 200 metric tons of conventional rocket fuel. It is the energy source of tomorrow, 1,000 times more powerful than nuclear energy. 100% efficient, no byproducts, no radiation, no pollution. A few grams could power a major city for a week.
Victoria turned to Kohler.
And now, I want to see my father, she demanded. I showed you the lab. Now I want to see my father.
Kohler stared at her.
Who else knew about this?
He asked.
No one, Victoria said. I told you that.
Kohler exhaled. He paused as though choosing his next words carefully.
Suppose someone did find out. And suppose someone gained access to this lab. What do you imagine they would be after? What would be missing?
I have no idea. Victoria angrily scanned the lab. Everything up here looks fine.
Kohler looked surprised.
Up here?
Vittoria had said it instinctively. Yes, here in the upper lab.
You're using the lower lab, too?
For storage. Kohler rolled toward her, coughing again.
You're using the hazmat chamber for storage. Storage of what?
Vittoria was losing her patience. Antimatter. Kohler lifted himself on the arms of his chair.
There are other specimens? Why the hell didn't you tell me?
I just did, Vittoria fired back. And you've barely given me a chance.
We need to check those specimens, Kohler said. Now.
Specimen, Vittoria corrected. Singular. And it's fine. Nobody could ever...
Only one?
Kohler hesitated.
Why isn't it up here?
My father wanted it below the bedrock as a precaution. It's larger than the others.
Although Vittoria's father had been hesitant to create a large specimen, Vittoria had pushed him hard. She argued that in order for antimatter to be taken seriously, she and her father had to prove two things. First, that cost-effective amounts could be produced. And second, that the specimens could be safely stored. In the end, she had won, and her father had acquiesced against his better judgment.
Vittoria,
Kohler insisted, his voice tense.
How large a specimen did you and your father create?
Vittoria felt a wry pleasure inside. She knew the amount would stun even the great Maximilian Kohler. She took a deep breath. A full quarter of a gram. The blood drained from Kohler's face.
What? That converts to almost 5 kilotons. That much antimatter could literally liquidate everything in a half-mile radius.
Kohler was already heading for the elevator. Which is why, Vittoria said, my father kept it in hazmat, under a fail-safe power and a redundant security system.
Kohler turned, looking hopeful.
You have additional security on hazmat?
Yes, a second retina scan. Kohler spoke only two words.
Downstairs. Now.
The freight elevator dropped like a rock, another 75 feet into the earth. When they reached the bottom, the elevator opened, and Vittoria led the way down the dimly lit corridor. Up ahead, the corridor dead-ended at a huge steel door. Hazmat. The retina scan device beside the door was identical to the one upstairs. She approached. Carefully, she aligned her eye with the lens. She pulled back. Something was wrong. The usually spotless lens was spattered, smeared with something that looked like blood. Confused, she turned to the two men, but her gaze met waxen faces. Both Kohler and Langdon were white, their eyes fixed on the floor at her feet. Vittoria followed their line of sight, down.
No! Langdon yelled, reaching for her. But it was too late. Vittoria's vision locked on the object on the floor. It was both utterly foreign and intimately familiar to her. Her father's hazel eyeball. The security technician held his breath as his commander leaned over his shoulder, studying the bank of security monitors before them. The object they were pondering on the monitor was a canister of some sort, a canister with transparent sides. That much was easy. It was the rest that was difficult. Inside the container, as if by some special effect, a small droplet of metallic liquid seemed to be floating in midair. The droplet appeared and disappeared in the robotic red blinking of a digital LED descending resolutely, making the technician's skin crawl.
Can you lighten the contrast?
The commander asked, startling the technician. The technician heeded the instruction and, ever so faintly, printed next to the LED, 4 capital letters came into view. 50 meters below ground, Vittoria Vetra stumbled forward, almost falling into the retina scan. The mechanism beeped and the door slid open. Even with the terror of her father's eye boring into her soul, Vittoria sensed an additional horror awaited inside. When she leveled her blurry gaze into the room, she confirmed the next chapter of the nightmare. Before her, the solitary, recharging podium was empty. The canister was gone. They had cut out her father's eye to steal it. Once removed from its recharging platform at CERN, the canister would count down inexorably. A runaway train. And when time ran out, the countdown had begun. Langdon didn't know what else to do. He took his handkerchief and laid it on the floor over Leonardo Vetra's eyeball.
Mr. Langdon.
Kohler's face was expressionless. He motioned Langdon out of earshot. Langdon reluctantly followed, leaving Vittoria to fend for herself.
You're the specialist, Kohler said, his whisper intense. I want to know what these Illuminati bastards intend to do with this antimatter.
Langdon tried to focus. The Illuminati had always wielded tremendous power through financial means. They controlled banks. They owned gold bullion. They were even rumored to possess the single most valuable gem on Earth, the Illuminati diamond, a flawless diamond of enormous proportions. Money, Langdon said. The antimatter could have been stolen for financial gain. Kohler looked incredulous.
Financial gain? Where does one sell a droplet of antimatter?
Not the specimen, Langdon countered. The technology. Kohler shook his head.
That canister has only 24 hours before the batteries die. Researchers would blow themselves up before they learned anything at all.
He's right. Vittoria's voice was frail. Both men turned. Vittoria was moving toward them, her gait as tremulous as her words. We need to call Interpol, she added. Even to herself, her voice sounded distant. We need to call the proper authorities immediately.
Kohler shook his head. Absolutely not.
The assassin stood at the end of the stone tunnel. It was almost time. Janus had promised someone on the inside would open the door. Minutes later, exactly at the appointed hour, there was a loud clank of heavy keys on the other side of the door. Metal scraped on metal as multiple locks disengaged. One by one, three huge deadbolts ground open. Vittoria headed for the door.
Please stop!
The director sounded asthmatic now, as he accelerated after her.
Just tell me what you want. We need to work together here.
Vittoria came to a full stop halfway across the lab, but she did not turn.
I want to find the antimatter, and I want to know who killed my father.
She waited. Kohler sighed.
Vittoria, we already know who killed your father.
Now Vittoria turned.
You what? I didn't know how to tell you. It's difficult. You know who killed my father? We have a very good idea, yes. The killer left somewhat of a calling card. That's the reason I called Mr. Langdon. The group claiming responsibility is his specialty.
She turned to him. Mr. Langdon, I want to know who killed my father. And I want to know if your agency can find the antimatter. Langdon looked flustered.
My agency? You're with U.S. intelligence, I assume? Actually, no.
Kohler intervened.
Mr. Langdon is a professor of art history at Harvard University.
Vittoria felt like she had been doused with ice water.
An art teacher? He is a specialist in cult symbology.
Kohler sighed. Victoria, we believe your father was killed by a satanic cult. The group claiming responsibility calls themselves the Illuminati. Please, let me explain.